This is Writer's Mosaic in Conversation. Bashmi Fraser talks to the poet, novelist and memoirist Mona Dash about how her life experiences have informed her writing.
First of all, thank you very much, Bashabi, for this opportunity and for the profile on Writer's Mosaic. It's my absolute pleasure to be here talking to you. So in terms of when I thought I could be a writer, writing, I think, was something I did even as a child, because my mother is actually a poet from Orissa. She writes mostly in Oriya, a little bit in English as well, but a lot of poetry. So, and it was when we were growing up, I'd always see her, you know, conversations with various other poets who'd visit our home, and they'd be sitting out in the evening, and sometimes you'd ask her, what are you doing now? And she'd be like, I'm thinking. So it was a very, you know, usually you find mothers cooking and obviously doing things like that, but it's always there in my head that, okay, one can actually just, you know, sort of sit there, pause and think and write. So that was there. I used to write as a child, but it was more as just something you did, and a lot of school children obviously write poetry, especially because it's what we're taught. But gradually, as I grew up, and then there was education, very different from poetry, because I didn't exactly study literature. So I stopped writing for a while. I think a lot during my engineering, especially during the MBA early years of my corporate life, I couldn't fit it in, as you asked that, you know, how do you sort of fit and balance both? So I really couldn't. But I had been sort of quietly writing, and I used to call myself like a closet writer, didn't exactly send things out. But to actually then make it almost a discipline of sending things out, of trying to get published, and, you know, taking that long haul journey being credible and writing and constantly improving. I think that is a big thing, that unless you actually send your work out, get critiqued, network with people and meet other writers, you don't know where you exactly you know, you have to sort of make it a craft. And I also read more. So I think what I'm saying is that I used to kind of write, but to become a writer is to make it both a science and an art. And I think I started doing that probably the last 10 years or so. I think my first book was published, a novel, then there was a poetry, and that's when it sort of all got up. But I think what happens is, as you become more and more engaged and engrossed, the time comes, because it's more about mind space rather than actual time.
Your work has been widely anthologized, Mona, and critically acclaimed. Your first two books, Untamed Heart, 2016, and Dawn Drops, 2017, actually published by Writers Workshop, the second one, which is a leading poetry publisher, were both published in India. Could you tell us briefly something about these two publications, and what was the inspiration behind them?
Yes, the small thing is, the Dawn Drops was actually published before. It was in India by Writers Workshop, which I think has launched so many other writers from India, but it was actually published literally early 2000, I think 2001 or 2, so it is much earlier. My second collection, Certain Way, which was published by Skylark and Yogesh, that was published in 2017. But yeah, the Indian experience, I mean, Writers Workshop, like I said, it was at that time P. Lal was still there, and I remember sending my manuscript to him, and he accepted. So that was how it was. With the second one, the novel, I think it was more of a journey, because I also went the very traditional way, which was to find a literary agent. I was represented by Red Ink Literary Agency in India. And they eventually found the publisher, Tara Research Press, which is like an independent press in India. So I think it was a longer journey with the novel, as it always is, actually. Then I think there were the other books here.
I was at the launch of your poetry collection, A Certain Way, by Skylark Publications, which was a memorable occasion where it was a joy to hear you read. Your book has been mentioned at the House of Lords, and you have been awarded the Word Masala Prize, one of many prizes, for your poetry. In the collection, you boldly assert your immigrant status, but strongly reject any effort to fit the stereotype. In your title poem, you say, as an immigrant, I'm expected to behave in a way, a certain way. And you assert, for an immigrant, there is no certain way to be. you stress this urge to become, not just be. The individual who comes with a history and a past, yet wills a transformation by the new experience in journeys, in settling elsewhere, and building a home far away from the homeland. And in the skin of tradition, you say, the heart that belongs, never accepting, runs. Runs the farthest to shed the centuries of old skin. And in Diaspora, your poem, you speak about the significance of place, of roots, of dispersion. You even have the Greek word in print as the title of the poem. So would you like to tell us about the themes in your poetry, which in a way are protest poems, am I right?
Yes, I think the fact, the fact that you move homes, I think that is, of course, something which is very prevalent in my poetry, and I guess in a lot of diaspora writers. But I think I strongly do push that what you're meant to conform to, that when you become a the diaspora writer or an Asian writer in the UK or anywhere outside of the region, there is an expectation about what you're meant to write, what you're meant to feel. And what I'm trying to say, therefore, in all of those poems is that, I don't want to be conforming. I don't want to be conforming to the stereotype. But also, it is not that I'm not kind of taking my past, or I'm not accepting the roots, which are there. So I'm not that, I'm sort of rejecting that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to take both aspects. And that is what I want, to be sort of recognized or seen, I guess. So I think that is where, so I've sort of approached this, I think there's another poem I have got, but it's like the sort of two-headed god, you're sort of looking out, looking in, Jaina. So I've tried to bring that sort of an aspect, and I'll try to look at it from different lens. So sometimes it's the lens of the immigrant who has moved. Sometimes it's even the lens of people who are still there at home and how they look at you. And there is something in suitcases, sort of image. So how are you perceived? And how are you perceived both from home, both from the new home, and how you perceive yourself? So all of those, it's like 360 degrees views, and it's not that each of them matches with the other. So that's how I'm sort of exploring that at various lenses.
Your collection of short stories, Let Us Look Elsewhere, published by Dahlia Books 2021, is a collection that moves seamlessly between Britain, India, and several locations in Europe, which actually seem to reflect your own journeys that you yourself continue to make, starting from delving into India's past in that very moving story of the nationalist struggle in The Boatman, but also set in places like Finland, in Iceland, in the Czech Republic. Many of them are about love.
The characters of the book are, as you're saying, they're all looking for something different. They're all looking, they're exploring, and that's how I sort of then thought that it made sense to kind of start that piece off. And hopefully it makes people want to read more, because I know it says somewhere that prepared to be annoyed or prepared to be, disappointed. But I really hope that... that's not what people are, and people sort of see that it's the variety which one can bring in.
I think people will want to read more. I mean, every story is startlingly different from the previous one. So it's really absorbing, it's fascinating. Yet wherever the narratives unfold, India remains a presence in your short fiction. In characters visiting from India, like Hitesh and Meera on business trips in the Golems of Prague, or Maya, adopted and brought up in England in watching the Aurora, or with Erno, traveling to India in the sense of skin. India is woven into your stories. How do you make your choices for the stories you tell?
The choices, I think it's all very, can be very different. I mean, The Boat Boy is probably one of the more few fictional stories. It's like obviously based on a true incident which had happened in Orissa, which not many people know about even in India. And one time I was just thinking about that, and I was like, nobody else has actually written this. There was only one poem written by Oriya poet long before, but I really wanted to bring that story out. So that's how I attempted writing it, in a slightly giving voices, which of course nobody knows because the boy died very young, Baji Raut. But the other stories, it all sort of fascinates, I think, characters who are, I know, like exploring different worlds, the dualities, being sort of ambiguous, and they're in love, but they're also, there's longing. So I think characters like that is what I try to build. I mean, the story, for example, I'll give a short example of The Sense of Skin, which is obviously, I don't know any fur animal skinners as such, or no, I don't know about fur farming. But that story came about just when, literally at a work lunch, when an acquaintance, I think one of our partners, she said, oh, she was visiting India, and she was on a train. And driving, I mean, she's an English woman, and she was on a local train, and she found, talked to a guy from Finland who was an animal, was a fur farmer. So that, it was so interesting to think of, why would somebody from Finland be on a local train and being a, you know, fur farmer. So from there on, fur farming to animal skinner, I kind of really wanted to explore, how does somebody from that really cold country go to India, the warmth and the fact about skin. That is what the whole story is also about, because it's the sort of other sense of, you know, the sensual aspect of skin. So that's how that came about. But many of those stories are, Iceland, again, it was a very powerful place to visit. I mean, very different place. So I really wanted to bring out that, you know, kind of the loneliness, and also the her nostalgia in that setting. So, yeah, so I think each of them is very kind of, and of course, Golems of Prague, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's somehow a story which is probably the only one I've related a little bit to my workplace, because it is about automation. But it's somehow not been picked up too much. I'm not sure why, but I'm exploring the loss of identity and job from the other side. It's not from an Indian perspective, where the Indians are actually the, on the... other end, but that can also happen, and that's what I was exploring.
I will now move to an earlier book of yours, since I sense it is probably the closest to your heart, A Roll of the Dice. Yeah. I've looked on the internet, curiously it's been called a novel, but it's definitely a memoir, and I can see it was published by Linen Press, which I know does post-colonial publications, 2019. So here, the first person narrator, and you actually, what amazes me is the way you use voice. You can have second person narrator, third person, first person, but here, because it's a memoir, it's definitely a first person narrator. It's compellingly honest and immersive. I found it difficult to put down the book. Once again, it is about love and the tragedy of loss, this time of a baby. So it's really poignant. It is both moving and inspiring, imbued with the narrator's determination to reverse a genetic verdict and become a mother again. You come across as an impressive fighter, opposing patriarchy in society, in the workplace, you know, against the domineering, insensitive, aggressive male colleagues and bosses even. But the narrative also reflects your erudition, which is very apparent. The research is to understand the hurdles you face, the options you have in the face of having a child with SCID, a severe combined immunodeficiency, and you explain it very well for the reader. You have had a very supportive family, your parents, your sister, your husband, friends, medics, but a whole raft of friends on social media whom you never meet, but who remained your reliable. It's almost like, you know, they were like the floating support when you're trying to swim and there's a danger of drowning. Would you like to share with us when you felt you were ready to share your story with readers?
It is a memoir, as you said, it's, and every bit of it is true. I mean, there's literally nothing made up in that story. And I did, when I started to write it, I think there was also a viewpoint that maybe make it fictional, because it, like you said, many people thought it's like a page turner. You know, it can be But on the kind of with a different angle. But I think for me, it was also getting the awareness, because SCID is a very little known condition. And it was also very important for me that I just wanted to say the truth, because there are these very rare conditions, and even PROM, which is what, you know, the premature rupture, which happened. These are very lesser known conditions. So I did want to bring that and hope that at some stage it gives hope to people who are, going through similar. So that was one angle of it, which is why I did bring in a lot of the scientific things, but I wanted to make it understandable. But when was I ready? So I actually didn't write any of that when I was going through it. I mean, it's not that I was maintaining a diary or a journal, but, you know, it was also intense that I never forgot any of it. I think it happened after I was actually doing my MA in creative writing, and I think
you got a distinction.
I did, yes. And actually, I didn't mention that to you. I've literally just completed my MPhil in creative writing from the same year, so I've just got that degree.
You don't stop.
Few months. Well, no, that one's it, I think. But it was in the same university, and I think I wrote a small piece. As one of the, you know, sort of work. And I think I was trying to do it like within some 2,000 words. It was a piece about something personal you had to write as part of the course. And I did that. And then we also had to workshop and read it to each other. And the other students, they were all like, why? And even the professor, she said, why have you stopped at just this? And I said, oh, well, I'm just trying to write an article, send it out somewhere maybe. And they said, no, we just want the whole book. We want to see this as a story because it's incredible. And I was asking, why would people want to know? And they said, no, you should go right back to your life, you know, start off from the marriage, about everything. So I wasn't, but then also I was very conscious, it's a memoir. It's not, the focus has to still be there. I didn't want to write more about other things. So it was very focused on the actual struggle. But like I said, they wanted it, you know, in full detail. So that's how I sort of started it. I think what year was that? Probably about, it got published in 2019. So I think I wrote it around 15 or 16, I was writing it. And then I was very lucky to find the publisher again, Linen Press, because initially I think I've always used the traditional route. I was trying to find some agents. And again, it's very interesting about what people come back with. And this is the thing, this is an Asian writer writing about an universal topic, about motherhood, science, genetics. And that didn't sort of work because that's not what they were expecting, you see. So they were, I didn't exactly go through too much of that route, but then I knew with the Linen Press. And I think Lynn, she's an amazing editor and publisher, and she actually picked that book. And some of the work, you know, sort of using the language to make it readable, like from the science part of it. That's how we sort of worked on some of that as well. So I think that's how it came, and I really enjoyed. I mean, I loved writing that as well. It was a very, I think the writing was one part, but when we did the actual editing during the publishing process, that's when I went through all of it again. Some of the fight was, yes, against patriarchy, but some of them was almost just against destiny, I guess, of having, when something is in your genes, what do you do? You sort of accept it, or you fight it, or you try to overcome. So I think that's what it was all about.
I would like to go back to your poetry, Mona, if that's all right. And to the last poem in your collection, A Certain Way, called Immersion. And it's to your father, and it's dated 9th July 2009. And I can see it is set in Pondicherry.
Yes.
Which is very close to your heart because your parents kept going back there.
Yeah.
So it is a journey you make to perform the last rites of your dear father. You end by saying it was, and I quote you, a perfect immersion. You are gone, but you are home. Home is about a refuge, isn't it, Mona? Mona, could you tell us about this poem, which signifies so much, that marks your own writing?
So yes, that poem, obviously, it is, like the memoir, it'll always be very close to my heart because it is for my father. And what had happened is my parents were living in Pondicherry and at that time, and my father's death, and why it says it's a perfect immersion, because the way he passed away was literally almost very perfect for him, and not for all of us, because we all still miss him so much. But he was literally walking back home. You know, they'd gone to the ashram and the temple, and they were walking back home, and he just fell, and he had a stroke, and he was, you know, it was you literally pass away walking on your your steps. So, and therein there is the story of and my father was a very unattached kind of person. So he was not, he was a doctor, but also very much a kind of yogi almost in his heart, I think, in his heart and soul, which also that's what everybody else around has felt as well, which explained almost why he sort of went so unusually or, sort of mysteriously for him or for anybody else. So I think that's what I wanted to bring out. And the whole thing about Pondicherry, and the point is, of course, as you know, for all of us who are away from home, you get that awful phone call from India sometimes saying that, you know, this has happened and you're too far away. And my son at that time, he was very young. He was only 2 years, and he'd actually never, considering all the background he had never been to India. So it was my initial worry was, how do I do this? You know, he was too young to leave. I mean, how do we take him? Because with this, he was fine, but if the immunity related issues, you know, do you want to go back to India? But then it was my father. So I think that was a lot of thing. And they actually did finish their last rites before I could make it back. But what I said was, I need to be there. And I think they said that, we'll just keep some of the ashes for you. So when you come, we'll have this sort of this immersion. So that's what was done. And I think that's what I have described. So it was just something which, they sort of kept for me, which is why it was so special. And I think that whole scene, I mean, that is all true, that, you know, we did that in the seas. And Pondicherry is a very different place. It's a very spiritual place in India, something it's always hold dear. So yes, and I think my father was very happy in those years. And I think, like I said, because he died healthy, he died just walking in his steps, it was almost like he knew he was going home. So I think that's what I was trying to bring out.
It's been wonderful talking to you today, Mona Dash, our profile writer for Writer's Mosaic. Thank you for being with us. It's been an absolute pleasure and privilege to hear you speak about your work today. Thank you very much.
You for your wonderful questions and comments on my work.
Bashabi Fraser was talking to the poet, memoirist and novelist Mona Dash. To hear more writers, go to writersmosaic.org.uk.